Welcome everyone to our first vod of the new zman. It's great to see you all, old and new. Old and new. The reason why I thought I may need a few extra minutes tonight, because I really have a topic to discuss that I think would be helpful. But when I first discussed with Rabbi Kier doing this topic, I couldn't just discuss this topic. I didn't know where to begin, and I didn't feel equipped to do it. Then I came with this chap of how to discuss this topic in a way that's be more relevant, and people will be able to absorb it better. So, but the only way to do that is going to come out like we're doing two topics. But the first topic is only just a entree to the topic I really want to discuss. So that's why I just need a couple of extra minutes tonight. So may go like 10 minutes over. Okay, so I told them if they have a minion at 10:30, rather than us to have like high blood pressure starting at 10:29, everyone, am I going to finish on time or not? So I probably go like 10 minutes over. So if you're going crazy, I told them they have a minion, they could dive at 10:30. You could just dive at 10:30 if you can't. Okay, but you're going to miss the punchline. But I apologize, I'm not doing it on purpose. Okay. I like to start with a chazal in Parshas. Oh, I don't believe it. Is the wrong sefer? Can someone get me a chumash, please? Oh, thank you. That's so nice of you. Can you just find me the Schanan Perek Dalad Pasuk Mem Aleph? Okay.
What's done in what?
Just Perek Dalad plus my mouth. Okay, thank you. So the Pasuk says Perek Dalad Pasuk my mouth. Oz Yavdil Moshe Sholosh Ar Mevar Yarden. So, what was going on? The Arei Miklat, had to be consecrated in order for them to be real cities of refuge, where the Rotzeach can go b'shogeg, so he won't be killed by the Gol Adam. He was able to go to the Arei Miklat. So it says, Oz Yavda Moshe. So Moshe separated, consecrated, and designated the three Arei Miklat, Be'evar Yarden. What's the big deal? Moshe did this. There were six Arei Miklat. What's he saying? He was separated three. So the Sforno says, but I don't have a Sforno. The Sforno says that the Chiddush of the Pasuk here is that none of the Arei Miklat worked until all six were designated. And the other three were not going to be designated until they got into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going into Eretz Yisrael. So what was the point? It's like I know someone said, at my chasana, there's the speeches will be right after the soup, and we're not serving any soup. That's a joke. The for Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and designate and separate the Arei Miklat, what was the point if nothing was happening? So the Sforno says that he wanted to show Klal Yisrael the chashivas of a mitzvah, that an epis mitzvah, something to do, something he was going to try and do, even though it would apparently be totally worthless. And nothing will come from it, but Klal Yisrael was able to see the importance of doing a mitzvah. So I wanted to point out over here that Lemaisa, so many things had recently happened, you know, in Klal Yisrael. They saw the Nisim of the Baal Pa'ar and 200,000 people died. And the Parsha, you know, right earlier in the Parsha, you have all the Kriyas HaTorah of Tisha B'Av, that what happens if you don't keep the mitzvahs. And the few psukim leading up to Oz Yavdil Moshe says that if you that if a person keeps the mitzvahs, our existence will be forever, whatever that means. Our existence will be forever, what it means, this life, afterlife, we'll have mamash so much if we keep the mitzvahs. So you think that there is so much hashpa that was filled over here, Klal Yisrael hashpa all around them, but still, for Moshe Rabbeinu to do something that had absolutely accomplished nothing, like, I don't even know what it is. How do you separate three cities? The cities didn't get picked up in the air and get pushed aside. They're not objects. This is real estate. He just went, you know, I don't know what he did. I assume those are the three cities. I don't even know what it is. He Oz Yavdil Moshe. There was no physical act. It was just, you know, he did it. Yet it was a hashpa. Moshe Rabbeinu felt it was hashpa for Klal Yisrael. So I want to speak tonight, at least at the beginning, about the koach hashpa that is very, very significant, very big koach hashpa, and very people often miss or confuse chinuch with, you know, rules and kpedas, when the job of chinuch is to be mashpia. It's really the job. You need a tzura of some rules, but you have to be a mashpia. Someone went to the stipler and asked the stipler, how does he get his kid to daven? What should he do? So the stipler said, if you want to teach your kid to daven, daven. That's the best hashpa. This is a very famous insight the stipler said. He said it, you know, many different times, different ways. You know, I myself, in trying to figure out, I had this whole meeting. I moved my seat. I don't know if anyone's paying attention. I moved my seat, you know, at least for part of the davening, to what extent, because I moved my seat to where my shir sits because of this vort of the stipler. Because if you want to teach the kids to daven, you have daven. They were, you know, whatever, they're not all holding, you know, necessarily all the time. And I felt that, you know, I'm their Rebbe, so I feel like if I daven with them, I can be mekayim this more, even though I, you know, take attendance. There's only so much I could do from the distance that I'm at. I'm sitting, you know, up there, I'm seat, you know, like that. It's like too far away. If you want to teach someone to daven, you just daven. I heard a good word from Rabbi Sachs, who was the Mor D'Astra in the camp, Camp Mogen Avram. So they used to have, many moons ago, the orientation for all the counselors in the city before everyone went up to camp, all the staff. So my first year as a staff member, so he had this, there was a meeting on the 16th Avenue at Gouda. So I remember, I must have been finished 11th grade at the time. And he said, you know, I have to remember that a counselor is the father, the mother, and the Rebbe of the kid. And even if you don't currently daven so well, I remember this like yesterday, even if you don't currently daven so well, but now you have to, you're required to, and you shouldn't think you're a hypocrite. There's a lot of people say, like, I'm going to go daven. I don't daven, you know, daven's good. I'm not going to be a hypocrite just because I'm a counselor. I'm going to daven well. You're not a hypocrite. It's the best hechrich. The best hechrich is you have to be a mashpia now. You have to daven. Just to deher, the hashpa works both ways. My brother had this funny maisa. The first year he was a counselor. So in in the shul, he told a kid in camp, you know, to stop talking, and the kid said, "My father's minhag is to talk." So, I don't know, that's what the kid was joking. I have a, in the shuls, many of the shuls is a lot of talking. And, I don't know if he's here, but I always tell him a few times already. So in the shul that I grew up in Borough Park, so there was a shul B'nai Yehuda. Shabbos Mincha was a huge shul, and they literally must have had 300 people, 250 people davening for Shabbos after Mincha. I don't know why that shul was zocha for Shabbos after Mincha. It was packed, mamish packed. So maybe there's manim were good. I don't know exactly. So it was could be very, very noisy. I guess there were some weeks it was very noisy, but there was one man, not the Rav, who mamish kept everyone quiet. It was Mr. Max Wasser, you know, the Colonel of Bracha. He used to walk around, and he himself was a clean-shaven accountant, you know, but he was such an excellent role model in this area, that when he walked around with a smile, he just walked around, they went to people like this. I remember as a little kid, I was like so impressed. Like, he had these, you know, rough balabata and wouldn't listen to anyone. People would shush them and they would shush them back, you know. But when he walked around, he mamish had tremendous hashpa on the entire shul. I mean, it made a big roshim on me. Sometimes we have to, you know, to make a roshim on someone, you have to make, you know, just to think about things that make a roshim on you. I remember I was in Eretz Yisrael, my first year in Beis Medrash, so Rav Moshe Chetzatzal said over this maisa that made a very big roshim on me. He was trying to say, well, you could learn from everyone. So he was in Tel Aviv, Rav Moshe Chait, and he was sitting at a bus stop in Tel Aviv. And you can, I don't know, those of you who've been to Israel, Tel Aviv, you know, not the, you don't see too much Yiddishkeit there. It's like even hard. Like if you go into, you know, the streets of Manhattan or whatever, and downtown Miami, you're not really expecting to see much. But in, like, go to a city near Israel, it's like, oh, it's even harder because you know there's Yidden all around it. There's not much there in terms of the Ruchnias. And he was sitting at a bus stop, lots of stuff going on. There are not too many, you know, yarmulkes around. And there was a, you know, Chiloni street cleaner walking around. You know, couldn't tell what his origin was. You know, no yarmulke, it was just cleaning the streets. And he bends down, right, like almost under the leg, near the leg of Rav Moshe Chait, and he picks up half a challah roll, and he picks it up, he puts it on the bench. He didn't know who Rav Moshe Chait was, the Rosh Hashiva, you know? And he looks at him, he says, "Ein mavirin ala ochla." So you can imagine, you know, he's a shomer mitzvah, not a yarmulke, he's a street cleaner, I don't know, Mastabi, he's not a shomer Torah mitzvah. But here, someone had ashpa on him, like, you know, he once learned Ema Vin al Ochlin, and it made a very big roshim Rabbi Chait. He told over the Maisa, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and here he's going ahead and, you know, learning from this fellow. A person can be, have tremendous hashpa. We don't realize how much hashpa. This had a tremendous roshim Rabbi Chait. I mean, he was so moved by this. Like, wow, this aim of Virin al Ochla means you know, you don't know who you're affecting. There used to be a barber in the Italian barber. It was not Italian. It was Spanish barber. There are no Italians here. So there was a barber in the Publix on 8th Avenue and 163rd. Before the one over here was built, that was the Publix. And there was a barber there, Ralph. and for many years. Then he told me he's retiring. Ralph is retiring, and I said, "Where are you moving?" "I'm moving to the Mimosa. I bought a co-op in the Mimosa." Now, for those who live in Miami, the Mimosa is a hotel on Collins Avenue in like the 50s, and it's basically, maybe recently changed, but it's basically totally Jewish, Hungarian. The Jews lived there, you know. And I said, "The Mimosa? Why did you buy an apartment in the Mimosa?" I knew it was like strictly Jewish almost. "Why the Mimosa?" So he says, "I told my wife that when I retire, I want to go to a place where there's low crime and the people are nice. And the Jewish people, from what it seems to me, the Jewish people are, there's no crime and they're always very nice." A Spanish guy, he's giving haircuts. And it made such a roshim on him that, you know, you see a koach hashpa. I don't think he went to any shirim, he didn't go in any musa shmuzim, but it made a big hashpa on him. I was very moved when I was more recently in Eretz Yisrael, in the airport in Tel Aviv. So I went to use the restroom. So in the sink, right outside the restroom, there's a chain with an Atilis Yadayim cup. You know, you see that there's no shaychus to have an Atilis Yadayim cup in Tel Aviv airport. It's as Jewish as Kennedy, or less. And, you know, someone had the foresight to do that. You know, we have opportunities to be mashpia here in the yeshiva. We don't realize every move we make is an opportunity to be mashpia on someone, to mashpia on a kid or a high school kid. They say a meister of Shmuel Birnbaum, a former Talmud of his, came once to visit, and he handed him a check, donation for the Mir Yeshiva, and Rav Shmuel Berman looked at it. It was a check for $10,000. So Rav Shmuel looked at it. It was like a Talmud, a relatively young guy, and he's still in his 20s. He was married, but still in his 20s, mid to late 20s. So he looked at him and said, "Like, well, that's a lot of money, $10,000. So, like he said, "Can I take this?" He says, "Rebbe, the Reshiva could take it. I make that much money in 2 weeks." I try to figure out how much money that means. $20,000, like $200,000, whatever. $10,000, but I make that much money in 2 weeks. He said, "Azoi?" He said, "Yeah, 2 weeks." So he said, "Abrazoi, if that's the case," he gave him back the $10,000, and he says, "Go learn for 2 weeks. If that's what you make in 2 weeks, I give you $10,000 to support." Now, I had the story get out. The story didn't get out from Shmuel Birnbaum. So this guy went to learn for 2 weeks. It had such a hashpa on him that, you know, here the Reshiva gave him $10,000 to go learn. That's like powerful. Sometimes we can do an act that really sends a very strong message. There's a chizkuni that I found. This is the parsha of Zion. This is the parsha of when Yitzchak went to Plishtim and he met up with Avimelech. So the pasuk says, "So Vayeshev Yitzchak begrar, Vayishalu anshi amokam leishto," and people started asking about his wife. "Vayomer achosihi," and Yitzchak said, "Rivka is my sister." "Ki yari lemor ishti," he was afraid to say she's my wife. "Pen yarguni anshi amokam al Rivka ki tovas marahi," because maybe, you know, they're going to kill him because Rivka was beautiful. Okay, so the Chizkuni says, he has a kasha. He says like this. He has a kasha, the Chizkuni. Why didn't they take Rivka right away? It seems like they didn't take her. So asking about her, why didn't they take Rivka right away like they took Sarah? Sarah was taken immediately. And the Chizkuni answers, because Avram had given them Musar when Avram had gone through that territory. So now Yitzhak was there, the Hashpah still existed from Avram Avinu. So you see, okay, Avram Avinu is not Stam, a person giving, you know, trying to be Mashpia, but you see that...
He gave Musar to the Mitzrayim?
Whatever, he had given Musar to Plishtim. That's what the Chizkuni says. I mean, Mela, since he gave... He was Mashpia, and I have to understand, you know, Avram, you know, the Rashiva has the Shmuz, Re'u Ma Ben Shchuna L'Shchuna, this famous Shmuz said over in the Rashiva, the Koach Hashpah of one individual, Avram Avinu, the Pasuk says, why was it, when it came to, what was it, by Moshe Rabbeinu, so it says all the shepherds were chasing the Benos Yisro. And when it came to Rachel, here there was a girl by herself, and you know, she was like serving the, you know, all the shepherds there, and no one started up with Rachel. What's the reason? So the Medrash says, you want to know the difference between one shchuna and another shchuna? I'll tell you the difference. Because the whole story of Yaakov happened when they in Haran. And Haran, that's where Avram Avinu used to live. Avram Avinu lived in Haran. So Rashiva said, yeah, Avram Avinu lived in Haran. The Rashiva made a whole equation, and he figured out that it was more than 150 years earlier. Before this story that happened with Rachel, Avram Avinu had not been in Haran for 150 years. And the shepherds were not... Mistabra, not the high echelon of society. Like that, you know, feel like the... I once said this, I'd be careful. I once said it was the truck driver society, and one of my students said my father's a truck driver. So I apologize, I don't mean anything. You know, there are some very, very excellent truck drivers, but I just mean it as an expression, I guess. So, you know, they were probably the truck drivers of society, and yet still... 150 years later, it still had hashpah. Haran had the hashpah. It's like I just can't get back to it. I'm Mr. Wasser. You know, the fact that he's the one that went around, he was like a mashpia, but he didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. He just, if he was going around, he couldn't say anything. The fact that Avram Avinu lived there, and we have the ability just by acting in a certain way, it makes a very big hashpah. We don't even realize. Makes a very big hashpah. So, if that's the case, I want to get into the empire. Like, just moving into the conclusion. This is where I really want to go with this. You know, we're coming really towards the end of the year, end of Zman. And the issue here comes like if we could have such a koach hashpah. We want to put ourselves in position to be mushpa. That's really where I want to go. This is the part I was uncomfortable giving a vat on this, but with that as an introduction, that you know everyone has the koach hashpah. So we also have the ability while we're in yeshiva to be mushpa from the rebbeim, and often, you know, people mistakenly think that from yeshiva, the you know, I'm going to automatically have a close kesher with the Rebbe, and it's going to be like, have a great kesher. And then people will go, hey, like, oh, did I, you know, do I have a kesher? And I have a kesher. And then, like, the year's over, you know, who knows where, you know, you'll be next year, you know, but here, not here. But I didn't get a close connection. So the closer the connection, the more hashpah you could get. You are the beneficiaries of the relationship you have with your Rebbe. I feel more comfortable saying, because I'm not, you know, Rebbe in the base manager, so I don't feel you know, at all uncomfortable saying this, but people have to learn how to take advantage to make the connection to have, get more, receive more Hashpah. The more Hashpah we receive, the more we can give over Bez Hashem in our own, you know, future. But to establish the relationship is very, very important. You know, the year's running out. I remember before I left after high school, there was a musmach of the yeshiva that lived on my block in Borough Park, Rabbi Glass, and he said, "Oh, you're going to Israel. Oh, Rabbi Kanarik, mamish, adam gadol. You just, so I said, I feel uncomfortable. I don't even know him. Sometimes you just go over to him and you sit down. If anyone here knows Rabbi Kanarik, you've been to Israel, you know, should be well. And you just sit across. So just go over and just sit across from him." He said, "Just go sit across from him?" He said, "Yeah, just go sit across from him. You'll see if it develops such a relationship." So I, you know, like a very good, innocent teepish, you know, the story is even funnier. So I went my first year in Eretz Yisrael, and I go like the second day of this man, right? Kinnerik's sitting in the base manager by his table. Like, he sat at a table and learned in the base manager for like 55 years. Okay, I walked over, and he was learning over there. I pushed my seat by the table across from him, and he told me, "Regles, just sit there, and you'll see." Right, Kinnerik's like sort of a shy person, you know. So he was learning, and I'm sitting there. He looked up once or twice, and I'm just sitting there. And he says, after, I don't know, 3-4 minutes, "Do you want something?" I said, "No, I just was coming." I started making up this thing. And you know, I went back to my seat feeling, okay, I think I better try a different method. You know, you have to find the right method. You can't just, you know, it doesn't just happen. You have to, for our sakes, now in the elementary school and in high school, you know, the job of the Rebbe is not to wait for the Talmud to come up with all these techniques to get close. It's more expected, I think, at least to be effective. You know, elementary school Rebbe, high school Rebbe, you know, the Rebbe has to really initiate that to whatever extent. The Talmud also should try, but, you know, the Rebbe, you know, is expected to be very proactive. In the Beis Medrash, it's not viewed that way. Yeah, you have to know that. It's not viewed that way because there are so many pressures, and, you know, it's also a difference that's not mandatory education. So you don't know if a person necessarily is, you know, wants you know, Rebbe nosing into his business. It's like you have to be more delicate. You know, you can't discipline the Beis Medrash like you do in high school. You know, no Rebbe in the Beis Medrash ever went over to someone and says, "No, you know, you stop talking." Not that the guys talk, but you know, no one ever do such a thing. Like, you have to be a totally different type of education. So, and part of it is that, and part of it, the understanding is, like, there's the contact function. Like, they really can't do anything almost unless you go over to them. And you got to be a little bit, you know, savvy. You can't just, you know, sit across from them, you know, and they'll say, like, "Do you want something?" You have to use a little chachma. Is that the Reshiva has a shmuz by Lot, because Lot was punished because he separated from Avram Avinu. But the kasha is, you know, Avram Avinu said he pardoned Amalei. You know, we have to separate. If you go right, you know, I'll go left. Whatever you want to do, Lot. So what was the tie on Lot? Avram Avinu told him that, you know, we have to separate. If you go right, I'll go left. You go left, I'll go right. What was the taina on Lot? So I think it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. I think the pasuk says l'taiva yavakesh nifrad, that Lot was out for taiva. What was the raya? And that was the taina, because who nifrad chila? Despite the fact that Avraham Avinu told him we have to separate, Lot shouldn't have taken the first step. Should have waited, you know. We have to separate, okay? Separate. Meanwhile, I'm here. So you see that, you know, he was in the surroundings of Avraham Avinu. He could have taken more advantage of it, and by the fact that he didn't, it was even a tine on him. So I wrote down a couple of tachmulas. That these are, you know, just the things that I thought of, the things that a person could do to help stimulate kesher with a Rebbe. Okay. Okay. First, things that maybe you didn't think. You could think of things on your own. These are not written anywhere. Just thought of them on my own. But if you think of things on your own, you could do them. You could ask other people. I just wrote things that maybe you wouldn't have thought of. That I over the years I did. I had an amazing. I'm still close with my eighth grade Rebbe. Like I was, it's a real bracha for me. But I was very close in eighth grade, and I still keep a kesher with him to today. I was very close with my ninth grade Rebbe. My eighth grade was Rabbi Krauss, those that know him from camp. My ninth grade Rebbe, for those who were the Brooklyn guys, Rabbi Miller, who was teaching eighth grade, was my ninth grade Rebbe. I was mamish very close with him. And he was nifter, you know, a few years ago. I went in to speak. I flew in to speak at a shloshim that they made. By the way, does anyone know Rabbi Miller from here?
No, there was nothing.
So, I don't know if you realize that Nassano Feuerman is his grandson. His mother's father was Rabbi Miller. So, I went to speak to him. I was speaking to Rabbi Jacobson or Rabbi Wiener, and I said, you know, they should have a Talmud. What happened was they had two Talmudim speak at the Shloshim. They had this ninth grader who had him the year before, and then they had this eighth grader, an eighth grader. It was a ninth grader who had him before, and then I had him in ninth grade, and then I spoke next. This little kid came up to speak, and they said, we'd like to ask another Talmud to speak, and then I got up, you know, to speak. I thought it was, like, really dramatic. But you know, she had a tremendous hashpah on me. Tremendous hashpah on me. So I'm saying these things, okay, one idea I have over here. You could write over a sugya or some of their shmuzim and hand it to them. I mean, not each one, but like at the end of a zman or whatever, you can hand them a copy, you know, for yourself, and hand it to them. There's guys come collecting from the different branches, so they stop by my house. So I have one branch I start up with, you know, shmuzim from one place. I want to get the shmuzim. I tell them I'll double whatever I'm about to give. If he will write over if he'll get me a copy of all the shmuz written over. Can you imagine in the yeshiva? I don't know, I'm not going to say which of the branches, but one of the, you know, they're all chashuva, but they don't write over any of the shmuz. No one had any of the shmuzim. One guy has two, that guy has two. No one writes over the shmuzim. Crazy. The reshiva there has no time to write over a shmuzim. I don't sit there writing. Like Rabbi Lubin kind of sits and writes. Maybe here. I don't. But Rabbi Lubin even does not write over his shmuzim. He doesn't have time. I asked Rabbi Lubin, how do you remember the shmuzim? He says, I don't. He mamish doesn't. When there's a chazaras hashmuz, he takes the, or there's a marmakomas, you have to take copies. He takes the copy and he puts in his drawer. You know, and if it has the name of the parsha on it, you know, he maybe tries to put it together, but he doesn't have time to do it. That's a tremendous. You know, wow. I was in New Haven, Connecticut when the Rashiva used to go to Eretz Yisrael every year for 2-3 weeks. So it was like everyone used to go branching because there was no shear. So for 2-3 weeks, you were like free. You could do what you do. You know, I went to New Haven and I was there for like a month and Rabbi Edelman was giving shear and ksubis, you know, I think tray with tray. And before I left, I remember it was like December 25th, and, you know, I was shtick, and in my youth I was maybe a little less reverent than I should have been. And I went to the store, and I got some chashuva holiday gift-wrapping paper, you know, with the proper colors, and I wrote over the whole sugya. I wrote each ha'ara that he had on index cards, so I ended up with like 35 index cards that, you know, he had on every marmukum. I wrote each one over. I made a copy for myself, which I still have. I wrapped it, and I wrote a thank you note, and I said, Rebbe, I want Rebbe to remember me. I know this will for sure be one of the best Christmas presents you ever got. And I handed him the package. But he was so moved by it. I'm still close to Rebbe Edelman. I call him up with Shilas I have. And in fact, he was never in Queens. And it was in New Haven. And then, you know, I left. I only had him for a month. But I still, for my real estate, like serious Shilas, he's a big calf. You know, but he's like, you know, you can get him because not everyone realizes, you know, his, you know, that he could answer like really hard question, rough questions. So, you know, I'm still close with him, and I'm pretty sure it came from just that act. I don't know what made me think of it, but they were, you know, Valdik, but you can mamish different types of things. I have another idea. Okay, these are obvious calling before Yontif. If you're not in the yeshiva anymore, sending shalach manos. It's a funny story. I heard this from Rabbi Grumblatt. You may have heard the same from Rabbi Luban, but it's not possible to be as funny as the Rabbi Grumblatt's version. But it's the same story. So they used to go around when they were in Eretz Yisrael together as bachrim. They came up with this idea: you can never get into the gedolim. You have to wait hours, and they let you in times. But on Purim, they came up with a cheshbon that Purim, like you're allowed to, you start to live a shalach manos. They can't stop you from coming to the house. So they came up with this idea. They're going to deliver shalach manos to all the gedolim. Okay, a lot of gedolim. They made a list. They made like 15 packages. They're going to go around to the gedolim. They had two yeshiva guys. They had no money. You know, so they basically had like, you know, a hamantaschen and a and two jelly beans or something. You know, they wrapped them up in their, you know, nebuchal package, baggie. You know, with a twisty on it, and they were going to go around to the gedolim. So they go up to this gadol, and they knock on the door, and the rebbetzin, I don't remember which gadol, but you could ask either one of them to say it over. And they said, "Oh, come in. The rav is coming soon. Come sit him down in the dining room." And the two of them are sitting there waiting. Then there's another knock on the door, and it was a balabas came. Very choshev looking balabas in a very fancy suit, you know, came to deliver also shalach manos to the rav. He came with this big basket with cellophane up to the ceiling, like a $200 basket of all the different, and he comes down, he puts it down on the table, also asks to wait, raps at them, and like they're feeling really, they're going down this, you're like so embarrassed. Like here they have their little baggie with their hamantaschen, and they use it as an excuse to get into this gadol. And Rabbi, and this Baal Bas comes with this big basket. They're waiting together, and they're like, man, they're so embarrassed. They can't want to just get out of there. Then the rabbi comes in, and he says, Simchat Purim, Simchat Purim. Who's our book?
I think it's Brooke's father.
Our book's father, okay. Simchat Purim, Simchat Purim. He comes in, call them, call Shalach Manos. First thing you have to do is deliver, give Shalach Manos. So he picks up the basket, big basket, he hands it to Rabbi Grublat, Rabbi Luban, and he takes the small thing and he hands it to the Baal Bas. And they say it to our Torah, and Shalom Aleichem, Tzayis Melasham. They walk outside, Rabbi Luban and Rabbi Grublat are holding this big basket, and this Baal Bas is walking out like feeling really stupid, carrying this little amantash. Okay. Can offer to assist in different areas, you know, cleaning their office. You know, the reshiva, it was very hard to get close with the reshiva. It was very hard. He was never there. He was never in yeshiva. He was in yeshiva for shachris. Then he left, and he came in for shir. And right after shir, he left. And then he would come in on Wednesdays for a shmooze. So usually it was right after the shir, so it wasn't an extra coming. And on Shabbos, he would eat one meal in the yeshiva, usually, if he was up to it. He would eat a meal, and they would come in for a Shabbos shmooze, and gone. He was not in yeshiva, ever. He was never in his office. You could never go look for him. He was never in yeshiva. And to go to the house, they're not going to let you in. All these emergencies, you couldn't get into the yeshiva. It's like, how did you get close to him? So people tried the craziest tricks. You know, one guy went in, he vacuumed the house. He was vacuuming. He went and he said, Rebbetzin, you know, and he thought of it. He says, don't you ever have anyone vacuum? He says, well, yeah, sometimes I'm going to vacuum. Where's the vacuum cleaner? He took it, and that he became the vacuumer. Okay, I don't know if you could do that. I'm, you know, right, Luban vacuum his house. I don't know if he will or he won't, but I'm just saying you have to be creative. You have to come up, you know, everyone's different. You come up with ways that you could be helpful. Make an appointment to speak about things. If you have a shaila or advice, you don't have to be such a Sometimes asking a shaila advice, even if you think you don't need the advice, but sometimes it's kedai to ask what you think, just to keep the kesher. You may think it's like a little bit disingenuous, but it's not disingenuous. You see, the Baruch Shalom said, he asked the Malachim. I remember once I was driving with Reshiva. Reshiva asked me, I said this over by the yard site. The Reshiva asked me, what do I think about, should we print the Berkas David? Should we print the Shirim? Why was Reshiva asking me, a Shaila, do I think that we should print the Shirim? I want to know what I think. It's so ridiculous. To ask me, I think there are first of all 100 people who better answer that question than me. I happened to be driving him in the car that day, and he asked me what I thought. It's push it. He did not need to know what I thought, nor would it have made a difference what I thought. He was asking me what I thought because he knew by asking someone their advice, it endears that. Reshiva also knew he had to make a kesher. He had the opportunity. I'm sitting in the car. He was using it to make a kesher with me. So, it was very esteeming to ask me what I thought. I can't imagine I had any brilliant insight. If you didn't hear my story, the end of the story has nothing to do with anything. I just told them, Rebbe, what's the Shaila? I said, the Reshiva's notes of all the Pilpashirim are on the shelf. Rebbe Wender has his notes from all the last 7 years ago, 14 years ago, they're on the shelf. Well, all the Yeshirim are there, and he says, "Yeah, it's there." I said, "Yeah." He says, "And what happened?" I said, "I said no one reads it now. No one reads it. No one ever looks at it. So no, you can write the Shirim." I said, "No one's going to look at it then either. Not going to make a difference." And Reshiva, I felt funny saying it, but the Reshiva agreed. He wanted the Shirim written over. He thought it would be good to have them. He didn't have time to write it, and he thought it should be written. He said, "Yeah, that's what I was thinking also about." He didn't need to name my opinion on that. So it's not disingenuous. First of all, it will help to ask shailas, even things that you think are important. Whatever, I'm leaving, what do you think I should do? Should I do this? Should I do that? Switch chavruses. You can go over and ask advice. That's a very easy way to develop the kesher. And I just, as a final note, if anybody wants, I can't give it out, but I have over here, Rabbi Feuerman gave me, this is not a complete copy, so I want to get one that has all four pages. These are ideas to build personal, academic, and social connections. It was written for teachers by a secular author. And, I'll just smile and say good morning. These are things for teachers. But if you learn you can do it if you can be in the opportunity to be a mashpia, is a mamash unbelievable methods. You have a high school kid you want to develop a kesher with, and how do you do it? There are so many things that you wouldn't think of. Acknowledging your own mistake, that you made a mistake, is very endearing. Ask students for feedback or suggestions. I mama started this thing on every test. I asked my students for feedback on how the shiur is going, and they mama write the best feedback. Rebbe, your questions are very confusing because question one is out of order. There's absolutely no reason to write a question out of order. That's a great idea. I thought of the question first. I thought of another question. But you can't put it out of order. They write the best feedback. And the shiur doesn't get stale because you're getting feedback from the people. You have to wait till they tell their parents. So their parents call the principal, and then the principal has to tell you. So, you can get instant feedback from them. They tell you right away. So if anybody wants to see this, I have it in my office. I'd be glad to make a copy for you if you want. But we are in a position to be a mashpia, but we also can't forget when yeshiva, we also have opportunity to gain from mashpiam, so we try and take advantage, while we have the opportunity. Shkaya.